didn't do it,"
said the Duke. "No pain," thought the fool. "Funny, that. On the other hand, you obviously can't feel pain when you are dead. It would be wasted."
"You all saw that I didn't do it," said the Duke.
Death gave the fool a puzzled look. Then he reached into the recesses of his robe and pulled out an hourglass. It had bells on it. He gave it a gentle shake, which made them tinkle.
"I gave no orders that any such thing should be done," said the Duke calmly.
His voice came from a long way off, from wherever his mind was now. The company stared at him wordlessly. It wasn't possible to hate someone like this, only to feel acutely embarrassed about being anywhere near him. Even the fool felt embarrassed, and he was dead. Death tapped the hourglass, and then peered at it to see if it had gone wrong.
"You're all lying," said the Duke in tranquil tones. "Telling lies is naughty."
He stabbed several of the nearest actors in a dreamy, gentle way, and then held up the blade.
"You see,"
he said,
"no blood. It wasn't me."
He looked up at the Duchess, towering over him now like a red tsunami over a small fishing village.
"It was her," he said. "She did it."
He stabbed her once or twice on general principles, and then stabbed himself, and let the dagger drop from his fingers. After a few seconds' reflection, he said in a voice far nearer the worlds of sanity,
"You can't get me now."
He turned to Death.
"Will there be a comet?"
he said.
"There must be a comet when a prince dies. I'll go and see, shall I?"
He wandered away. The audience broke into applause.
"You've got to admit, he was real royalty," said Nanny Ogg, eventually. "It only goes to show royalty goes eccentric far better than the likes of you and me."
Death held the hourglass to his skull, his face radiating puzzlement. Granny Weatherwax picked up the fallen dagger and tested the blade with her finger. It slid into the handle quite easily, with a faint squeaking noise. She passed it to Nanny.
"There's your magic sword," she said.
McGrath looked at it, and then back at the fool. "Are you dead or not?" she said.
"I must be,"
said the fool, his voice slightly muffled.
"I think I'm in paradise."
"No, look, I'm serious."
"I don't know, but I like to breathe."
"Then you must be alive."
"Everyone's alive," said Granny. "It's a trick dagger. Actors probably can't be trusted with real ones. After all, they can't even keep a cauldron clean," said Nanny.
"Whether everyone is alive or not is a matter for me," said the Duchess. "As ruler, it is my pleasure to decide. Clearly my husband has lost his wits."
She turned to her soldiers.
"And I decree..."
"Now!"
hissed King Verence in Granny's ear.
"Now!"
Granny Weatherwax drew herself up.
"Be silent, woman," she said. "The true King of Lancre stands before you."
She clapped Tom John on the shoulder.
"What, him?"
"Who, me?"
"Ridiculous," said the Duchess. "He's a mummer, of sorts."
"She's right, miss," said Tom John, on the edge of panic. "My father runs a theatre, not a kingdom."
"He is the true king. We can prove it," said Granny.
"Oh, no," said the Duchess. "We're not having that. There's no mysterious returned heirs in this kingdom. Guards, take him."
Granny Weatherwax held up a hand. The soldiers lurched from foot to foot uncertainly. She's a witch, isn't she? Said one of them, tentatively.
Certainly,
said the Duchess. The guards shifted uneasily.
We've seen where they turn people into newts, said one. And then shipwreck them. Yeah, and alarm the divers. Yeah. We ought to talk about this. We ought to get extra for witches.
She could do anything to us, look. She could be a drab, even.
Don't be foolish, said the Duchess. Witches don't do that sort of thing. They're just stories to frighten people.
The guard shook his head.
It looked pretty convincing to me.
Of course it did. It was meant.
The Duchess began. She sighed and snatched a spear out of the guard's hand.
I'll show you the power of these witches, she said,
and hurled it at Granny's face. Granny moved her hand across at snake-bite speed and caught the spear just behind the head.
So, she said, and it comes to this, does it?
You don't frighten me, weird sisters, said the Duchess.
Granny stared her in the eye for a few seconds. She gave a grunt of surprise.
You're right, she said. We really don't, do we?
Do you think I haven't studied you? Your witchcraft is all artifice and illusion to amaze weak minds. It holds no fear for me. Do your worst.
Granny studied her for a while.
My worst,
she said eventually. McGrath and Nanny Ogg shuffled gently out of the way. The Duchess laughed.
You're clever, she said. I'll grant you that much. And quick, come on, hag. Bring on your toads and demons. I'll...
She stopped, her mouth opening and shutting a bit without any words emerging. Her lips drew back in a rictus of terror. Her eyes looked beyond Granny, beyond the world, towards something else. One knuckled hand flew to her mouth, and she made a little whimpering noise. She froze, like a rabbit that had just seen a stoat and knows, without any doubt, that this is the last stoat that it will ever see.
"What have you done to her?"
said McGrath, the first to dare to speak. Granny smirked.
"Edology," said Granny, and smirked. "You don't need any Black Alice magic for it."
What have you done?
No one becomes like she is without building walls inside her head, she said. I've just knocked them down. Every scream, every plea, every pang of guilt, every twinge of conscience, all at once. There's a little trick to it.
She gave McGrath a condescending smile.
I'll show you one day if you like.
McGrath thought about it.
"Horrible," she said.
"Nonsense,"
Granny smiled terribly.
"Everyone wants to know their true self. Now she does."
"Sometimes you have to be kind to be cruel," said Nanny Ogg approvingly.
"I think it's probably the worst thing that could happen to anyone," said McGrath, as the Duchess swayed backwards and forwards.
"For goodness sake, use your imagination, girl," said Granny. "There are far worse things. Needles under the fingernails, for one. Stuff with pliers.
Red-hot knives up the jacksie,"
said Nanny Ogg.
"Handle first, too, so you can cut your fingers trying to pull them out."
"This is simply the worst that I can do," said Granny Weatherwax primly. "It's all right and proper, too. A witch should act like that, you know. There's no need for any dramatic stuff. Most magic goes on in the head. It's headology. Now, if you—"
A noise like a gas leak escaped from the Duchess's lips. Her head jerked back suddenly. She opened her eyes, blinked, and focused on Granny. Sheer hatred suffused her features.
"Guards!"
she said.
"I told you to take them!"
Granny's jaw sagged.
What?
She said.
But I showed you your true self.
I'm supposed to be upset by that, am I?
As the soldiers sheepishly grabbed Granny's arms, the Duchess pressed her face close to Granny's, her tremendous eyebrows a V of triumphant hatred.
I'm supposed to grovel on the floor, is that it? Well, old woman, I've seen exactly what I am, do you understand? And I'm proud of it. I'll do it all again, only hotter and longer. I enjoyed it, and I did it because I wanted to.
She thumped the vast expanse of her chest.
You gawping idiots, she said. You're so weak. You really think that people are basically decent underneath, don't you?
The crowd on the stage backed away from the sheer force of her exultation.
Well, I've looked underneath, said the Duchess. I know what drives people. It's fear. Sheer, deep-down fear. There's not one of you who doesn't fear me. I can make you whittle your drawers out of terror, and now I'm going to take...
At this point, Nanny Ogg hit her on the back of the head with the cauldron.
"She does go on, doesn't she?" she said conversationally, as the Duchess collapsed. "She was a bit eccentric, if you ask me."
There was a long, embarrassed silence. Granny Weatherwax coughed. Then she treated the soldiers holding her to a bright, friendly smile and pointed to the mound that was now the Duchess.
"Take her away, and put her in a cell somewhere," she commanded.
The men snapped to attention, grabbed the Duchess by her arms, and pulled her upright with considerable difficulty.
"Gently, mind," said Granny.
She rubbed her hands together and turned to Tom John, who was watching her with his mouth open.
"Depend upon it," she hissed. "Here and now, my lad, you don't have a choice. You're the King of Lancre."
"But I don't know how to be a king."
"We all seed you. You had it down just right, including the shouting."
"That's just acting."
"Act, then. Being a king is...
Granny hesitated and snapped her fingers at McGrath.
"What do you call them things? There's always 100 of them in anything."
McGrath looked bewildered.
"Do you mean percents?"
she said.
"Them," agreed Granny. "Most of the percents in being a king is acting, if you ask me. You ought to be good at it."
Tom John looked for help into the wings, where Hal should have been. The dwarf was in fact there, but he wasn't paying much attention. He had the script in front of him and was rewriting furiously.
"But I assure you, you are not dead. Take it from me."
The Duke giggled. He had found a sheet from somewhere and had draped it over himself, and was sidling along some of the castle's more deserted corridors. Sometimes he would go in a low voice. This worried Death. He was used to people claiming that they were not dead, because death always came as a shock, and a lot of people had some trouble getting over it. But people claiming that they were dead, with every breath in their body, was a new and unsettling experience.
"I shall jump out on people," said the Duke dreamily. "I shall rattle my bones all night. I shall perch on the roof and foretell death in the house."
"That's banshees."
"I shall if I want," said the Duke,
with a trace of earlier determination.
"And I shall float through walls and knock on tables and drip ectoplasm on anyone I don't like."
"It won't work. Living people aren't allowed to be ghosts. I'm sorry."
The Duke made an unsuccessful attempt to float through a wall, gave up, and opened a door out to a crumbling section of the battlements. The storm had died away a bit, and a thin rind of moon lurked behind the clouds like a ticket tout for eternity. Death stalked through the wall behind him.
"Well, then," said the Duke, "if I'm not dead, why are you here?"
He jumped up on the wall and flapped his sheet.
"Waiting."
"Wait forever, Boneface," said the Duke triumphantly. "I shall hover in the twilight world. I shall find some chains to shake. I shall."
He stepped backwards, lost his balance, landed heavily on the wall, and slid. For a moment, the remnant of his right hand scrabbled ineffectually at the stonework, and then it vanished. Death is obviously potentially everywhere at the same time, and in one sense it is no more true to say that he was on the battlements, picking vaguely at non-existent particles of glowing metal on the edge of his scythe blade, than that he was waist-deep in the foaming, rock-toothed waters in the depths of Loncra Gorge, his calcareous gaze sweeping downwards and stopping abruptly at the point where the torrent ran a few treacherous inches over a bed of angular pebbles. After a while, the Duke sat up, transparent in the phosphorescent waves.
"I shall haunt the corridors," he said, "and whisper under the doors on still nights."
His voice grew fainter, almost lost in the ceaseless roar of the river.
"I shall make basket chairs creak most alarmingly. Just you wait and see."
Death grinned at him.
"Now you're talking."
It started to rain. Ramtop rain has a curiously penetrative quality, which makes ordinary rain seem almost arid. It poured in torrents over the castle roofs, and somehow seemed to go right through the tiles and fill the great hall with a warm, uncomfortable moistness, like Bognor. The hall was crowded with half the population of Loncra. Outside, the rushing of the rain even drowned out the distant roar of the river. It soaked the stage. The colours ran and mingled in the painted backdrop, and one of the curtains sagged away from its rail and flapped sadly into a puddle. Inside, Granny Weatherwax finished speaking.
"You forgot about the crown," whispered Nanny Ogg.
"Ah," said Granny. "Yes, the crown. It's on his head. You see, we hid it among the crowns when the actors left, the reason being no one would look for it there. See how it fits him so perfectly."
It was a tribute to Granny's extraordinary powers of persuasion that everyone did see how perfectly it fitted Tom John. In fact, the only one who didn't was Tom John himself, who was aware that it was only his ears that were stopping it becoming a necklace.
"Imagine the sensation when he put it on for the first time," she went on. "I expect there was an eldritch tingling sensation."
"Actually, it felt rather—" Tom John began, but no one was listening to him. He shrugged and leaned over to Howell, who was still scribbling busily.
"Does eldritch mean uncomfortable?" he hissed.
The dwarf looked at him with unfocused eyes.
"What?"
"I said, does eldritch mean uncomfortable?"
"Eh? Oh. Oh. No, I shouldn't think so."
"What does it mean, then?"
"Dunno. Oblong, I think."
Howell's glance returned to his scrawl as though magnetized.
"Can you remember what he said after all those tomorrows? I didn't catch the bit after that."
"And there wasn't any need for you to tell everyone I was adopted," said Tom John.
"That's how it was, you see," said the dwarf vaguely. "Best to be honest about these things. Now then, did he actually stab her, or just accuse her?"
I don't want to be a king, Tom John whispered hoarsely. Everyone says I'll take after Dad.
Funny thing, all this taking after people, said the dwarf vaguely. I mean, if I took after my dad, I'd be 100 feet underground digging rocks, whereas...
His voice died away. He stared at the nib of his pen as though it held an incredible fascination.
Whereas what?
Eh?
Aren't you even listening?
I knew it was wrong when I wrote it. I knew it was the wrong way round.
What?
Oh, yes. Be a king. It's a good job. It seems there's a lot of competition at any rate. I'm very happy for you. Once you're a king, you can do anything you want.
Tom John looked at the faces of the Lancre worthies around the table. They had a keen, calculating look, like the audience at a fat stock show. They were weighing him up. It crept upon him, in a cold and clammy way, that once he was king, he could do anything he wanted, provided that what he wanted to do was be king.
You could build up your own theatre, said Howell,
his eyes lighting up for a moment.
With as many trapdoors as you wanted, and magnificent costumes, you could act in a new play every night. I mean, it would make the disc look like a shed.
Would you come and see me? Said Tom John, sagging in his seat.
Everyone.
What? Every night?
You could order them to,
said Howell, without looking up. I knew he was going to say that, Tom John thought. He can't really mean it, he added charitably. He's got his play. He doesn't really exist in this world, not right now at the moment. He took off the crown and turned it over and over in his hands. There wasn't much metal in it, but it felt heavy. He wondered how heavy it would get if he wore it all the time. At the head of the table was an empty chair containing, he had been assured, the ghost of his real father. It would have been nice to report that he had experienced anything more, when being introduced to it, than an icy sensation and a buzzing in the ears.
I suppose I could help Father pay off the disc, he said.
That would be nice, yes, said Howell.
He spun the crown in his fingers and listened glumly to the talk flowing back and forth over his head.
15 years, said the Mayor of Lancre.
We had to, said Granny Weatherwax. I thought the baker was a bit early last week. No, no, said the witch impatiently. It doesn't work like that. No one's lost anything. According to my figuring, said the man who doubled as Lancre's beadle, town clerk and gravedigger, we've all lost 15 years.
No, we've all gained them, said the mayor. Stands to reason. Time's like this sort of wiggly road, see? But we took a short cut across the fields.
Not at all,
said the clerk, sliding a sheet of paper across the table.
Look here.
Tom John let the waters of debate close over him again. Everyone wanted him to be king. No one thought twice about what he wanted. His views didn't count. Yes, that was it. No one wanted him to be king. Not precisely him. He just happened to be convenient. Gold does not tarnish, at least physically. But Tom John felt that the thin band of metal in his hand had an unpleasant depth to its luster. It had sat on too many troubled heads. If you held it to your ear, you could hear the screams. He became aware of someone else looking at him, their gaze playing across his face like a blow lamp on a lolly. He looked up. It was the third witch. The youngest one, with the intense expression and the hedgerow hairstyle, sitting next to Old Fool, as though she owned a controlling interest. It wasn't his face she was examining, it was his features. Her eyeballs were tracking him from nape to nose like a pair of calipers. He gave her a little brave smile, which she ignored, just like everyone else, he thought. Only the fool noticed him, and returned the smile with an apologetic grin and a tiny conspiratorial wave of the fingers that said, "What are we doing here, two sensible people like us?" The woman was looking at him again, turning her head this way and that and narrowing her eyes. She kept glancing at the fool and back to Tom John. Then she turned to the oldest witch, the only person in the entire hot, damp room who seemed to have acquired a mug of beer, and whispered in her ear. The two started a spirited, whispered conversation. It was, thought Tom John, a particularly feminine way of talking. It normally took place on doorsteps, with all the participants standing with their arms folded, and if anyone was so ungracious as to walk past, they'd stop abruptly and watch them in silence until they were safely out of earshot. He became aware that Granny Weatherwax had stopped talking, and that the entire hall was staring at him expectantly. "Hello?" he said.
"It might be a good idea to hold the coronation tomorrow," said Granny. "It's not good for a kingdom to be without a ruler. It doesn't like it."
She stood up, pushed back her chair, and came and took Tom John's hand. He followed her unprotestingly across the flagstones and up the steps to the throne, where she had put her hands on his shoulders and pressed him gently down onto the threadbare red plush cushions. There was a scraping of benches and chairs. He looked around in panic. "What's happening now?" he said.
"Don't worry," said Granny firmly. "Everyone wants to come and swear loyalty to you. You just nod graciously and ask everyone what they do and if they enjoy it. Oh, and you'd better give them the crown back."
Tom John removed it quickly. "Why?" he said.
"They want to present it to you."
"But I've already got it,"
said Tom John desperately. Granny gave a patient sigh.
"Only in the, what's name, real sense," she said. "This is more ceremonial."
"You mean unreal?"
"Yes," said Granny, "but much more important."
Tom John gripped the arms of the throne.
"Fetch me Howl," he said.
"No, you must do it like that. It's precedent, you see. First you meet the..."
"I said, fetch me the dwarf. Didn't you hear me, woman?"
This time, Tom John got the spin and pitch of his voice just right. But Granny rallied magnificently.
"I don't think you quite realize who you are talking to, young man," she said.
Tom John half rose in his seat. He had played a great many kings, and most of them weren't the kind of kings who shook hands graciously and asked people whether they enjoyed their work. They were far more the type of kings who got people to charge into battle at 5 o'clock on freezing mornings, and still managed to persuade them that this was better than being in bed. He summoned them all and treated Granny Weatherwax to a blast of royal hauteur, pride and arrogance.
"We thought we were talking to a subject," he said. "Now do as we say."
Granny's face was immobile for several seconds as she worked out what to do next. Then she smiled to herself, said lightly,
"As you wish,"
and went and dislodged Howl, who was still writing. The dwarf gave a stiff bow.
"None of that," snapped Tom John. "What do I do next?"
"I don't know. Do you want me to write an acceptance speech?"
"I told you I don't want to be king."
"Could be a problem with an acceptance speech, then," the dwarf agreed. "You really thought about this? Being king is a great role."
"But it's the only one you get to play."
Well, just tell them no, then."
"Just like that? Will it work?"
"It's got to be worth a try."
A group of L'Ancre dignitaries were approaching with the crown on a cushion. They wore expressions of constipated respect, coupled with just a hint of self-satisfaction. They carried the crown as if it was a present for a good boy.